Adam, welcome to the Lewis and Kyle Show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Kyle. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So you recently wrote a book called The 200% Life, which we are pumped to talk about. One question that I have for you is around the spirit, though, because the book is about 100% inner world, 100% outer world. I know it's maybe a different way of saying that, but is the spirit a physical? Is the soul a physical reality? Does it exist? Can could does it occupy some sort of space?
Yeah, it's a great, it's a, I love the deep question right off the bat. This is wonderful. Let me ask you to see if you can answer it yourself. When I think of, and let me kind of repeat this back. When I think about spirit, I think of like is the same thing as like Shakti or consciousness, the energy that you feel. Are you in there aware that there is a voice inside your head?
Yes.
Are you in there that you're aware of different emotions?
Yes.
Some go, some stay, but they've, you know, they or they all come. Some stay a little bit longer, but they all go, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like that is in itself. If you're in there, that means there's a subject-object relationship. Means you're not your voice, you're not your emotions. So that means there has to be something, somebody, something, consciousness that's experiencing the emotions, experiencing the voice. Experiencing the reality of things unfolding, trees, there's earthworms, there's challenges in business, but it's not a subject because you are something that's experiencing it. The hardest thing about understanding who you are, right, is that you can't put the mind on it because the mind only knows what the mind has experienced. It's what it's read, what people have told it, the challenges and successes, and it regurgitates that information just like a computer program would. But you're in there again when you are feeling, when you say you feel high, I don't mean like actually like drug high, but when you feel high in there energy wise, who's in there experiencing it? And conversely, when you feel angry, who's in there noticing that you're angry? So from the deepest part of you, when you ask that question, you already know the answer to it. The thing is that you can't actually put words to it because words is using a mind that you're watching and listening to talk and narrate to you. Even in this conversation or your audience listening to this right now, is I would ask them is, are you actually listening to this? Are you listening to the mind narrate whether they like or dislike this conversation or they agree with me or disagree with me? And most of the time you'll realize that you are in there watching the mind narrate life. And then what ultimately happens is that it starts doing that for everything. You walk down the street, I don't like this tree. Why is that person wearing that? I would never buy that car. Why did somebody buy that car? What is they doing? I forgot to get an apple for lunch today. I'm just gonna have to eat out, right? That's just the constant chatter of the mind that you end up paying attention to. And then the challenge becomes of this is that you go to the mind to answer all of your problems, even though the mind says incredibly ridiculous things like, I should go up and punch this person, right? I mean, wait, our minds have all said crazy, ridiculous things, doesn't it? And then at the same time, when we're not feeling okay or our energy feels lapsed, we go to the mind and say, how do we feel better? And the mind goes, oh, go make more money. Go get a new partner. If you divorce this person, I promise you'll feel better. If you go and get a new job, that corner office, if you just made an extra $100,000, you just bought one more piece of real estate, then you'll feel good. But then the problem is you end up buying into that path and it just leads to one thing to the next. And once you satisfy one goal, you go to the next one and then it's the next. It's what's this is what's next. And the reality is the goals have a beginning and an end, but they're not the purpose of your life. And so you, and if you think about this, is think about every luxury item that you've ever had in your entire life, every luxury item, whether you wanted a bunny when you were a kid or a bicycle, then getting your driver's license and then turning 21 to legally drink, right? To get into college, buy your first home, buy your first investment property. You always wanted all these things, but once you got them, you wanted something else. And that's because of the incessant chatter and the doing form of the self-concept that you created. So again, when you answer that question of like, does it exist? I think you already know the answer to that because you're in there experiencing all of life. So next time, Kyle, somebody asks you who you are, you can say, well, I play roles in life. But who I am is I'm the witnesser, the experiencer of life itself.
I think that prior to that answer, I thought that emotion, like my question was about the existence of emotions. Because, like, I think that you can feel the physical reality of like anger or anxiety. Like you can feel the heaviness of those emotions and the bliss of like love and all of these different things. But I'm going to have to think about that a lot more before I have
where does it come from? Right. Like, how does it, like when people say my heart dropped all of a sudden, right? Like you get a text, somebody's breaking up for you. All of a sudden your heart dropped, or your heart didn't go anywhere. Your physical heart stayed the same. What you're saying is you cut off the energy that you feel and experience, which is the whole point of taking human form, which is to experience itself. If life is life and it's a subject, then it can't experience itself. So it almost creates an alternative reality so it can go into it and experience itself. And it's the same thing you do here. But humans are sent down here to evolve and to experience itself. And so there is no right or wrong. It's just experience. There is no success or failure. There's just, sure, there's challenges, but what we deem as success, somebody else deems as failure. So that can't be right. Can't be the reason why we're here, because all those things go away anyways. We all clear that we're all going to die, whether we want to admit that or not. We're only here for a very short period of time. Earth's been here for 4.5 billion years. You've been here for, what are you, 100, 120 years, maybe max that you get to. It would literally be like reading a 300 million page book and reading two sentences of that and go, I know exactly what this book is about. That's what we do when we come down here. We have no idea how we got here, why we're really here. And so the goal of that actual conversation, it should be freeing for people though. You should stop taking so much stress and putting onto you to go out there and try to make the world the way you want it to. It's not going to, if you even get it the way you want it to, then you got to worry about keeping it that way or not being sued or whatever it is. And I always hear this, it's almost irrelevant whether you go build a billion-dollar company or you are alone in the woods. They're both thoughts. They're both directions. They're both things that you're experiencing that consciousness itself wants to experience. So there's no right or wrong. We've just used our minds to say one's right, one's wrong. And by the way, that is only for our society. In other societies, they say that's right, that's wrong. They take the opposite approach to this. And then in the end, it'll pause. But then in the end, I mean, are people even going to remember Americans in 500 years? Seriously, somebody name me Mesopotamian or Neanderthal, right? I mean, it's like at some point, all societies that ever lived were removed and changed and re-existed by something else. Same thing will happen here too. Who knows what that looks like? And they'll look back and they'll be like, you remember all those Americans where they thought work was really the secret to all this? And I use the word work, not contribution or service or things you can do, but it's about trying to go and get something. If you think about it, it's really only been the last 50 or 60 years, maybe 70 years, depending on when you look at it, where people have woken up and said, Kyle, Lewis, go get what you want out of life. If you go do that, you'll feel great permanently. It's like all of a sudden, if you go get what you want, there's going to be a feeling tree outside that's somehow giving you total well-being every single moment. It doesn't work that way. But for hundreds of thousands of years, there's been old inscriptions that say, know thyself, right? You know, find thyself. Of these old kind of, you know, inscriptions that have just stung with us for eternity in history, as long as we can remember, which is about who are you, which is ultimately the question that you asked in the beginning, which is who am I?
I am enjoying this. I'll say that at the outset here. I think one of your mottos and kind of the framing here, right, is you have, you know, you're operating from what do you believe are some of the principal truths of life. That's like a series you have on YouTube, or the principles of life.
Yeah.
And principal truths of life. And what are the kind of what now, right? We're going to die. Okay. I don't think you're really going to find much disagreement for that one. And then you're the watcher, kind of some of these additional principles. Then the what now, and you're kind of hinting at it, is like, how do you go through moment to moment in life? And you have a motto about that, kind of trying to elevate the moment. I don't know exactly how you phrase it.
Yeah.
But what is kind of the conclusion that you've reached to about how you want to live your life in the face of all of these foundational truths that you don't think, those are the things you can't bend, right? You're not going to be able to bend that. So given that I'm stuck with that and I realize trying to change that's useless, how am I going about my life?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the mission of my life is to raise the moment up that's in front of me so the moment is better off for having passed by me. I think it's one of the highest ways, if the highest way, that you can live your life. And so for there, you show up into the business world not trying to get anything from your employees. You don't show up trying to take things from anybody. But yeah, you can still build. You can still hold people accountable. You can still fire people. You can still hire people. I mean, I have over 1,000 people that work for me, right? So it's not that you can't go build any of these things. It's just the way you want to show up in life to me is that you want to show up the best that you can serve the moment that's in front of you. Because that's the only thing that's actually real. Outside of that, you are going to your mind to think about the past or the future. This is also why people struggle with decisions so much, Lewis, is because really what people are doing when they're evaluating a decision, they go to their mind and their mind's eye and they do a dress rehearsal on how it's going to make them feel, right? So it's like you go in there like, should I move? Should I buy this thing? Should I go on a date with this person? And all you're doing is you're trying to build a little movie inside, and then you're waiting to see how that fits in and how that fits within you. Does it turn you on? Meaning your energy get higher, or is it lower? And that's how people make decisions. And so again, for me, it's always a starting position, which is, how do I want to feel today? I just got off a call a few minutes ago with a lot of our leaders, and I said, look, there's two wars going on, a government shutdown, potential economy breaks. Like, there's a lot going on out there right now. There's a lot to be negative. People are nervous. People are, you know, it seems to be palatable out there. And it feels like there's a mist a little bit out there. So I just told everybody, I said, just shake it off for a second. I said, is any of this worth the stress or energy over? No, just shake it off. And then as you do that, then act. So part of one of the things that we also like to do in our organization, that I try to teach to everybody, which is, and we can put a pin on this or come back to it, which is relax, release, then act. Because as a leader, your work product is decision-making. Your work product is decision-making. Remember, leadership is not an abstract comment reserved for somebody sitting in a corner office. Leadership is about getting others, if you're an employee, is about getting others to take a new level of action that benefits them in the organization. It's action. It's a verb. It's not a noun. It's not an abstract thing that just is there. So leadership is getting other people to think so they can think for themselves, and also getting other people into action so it benefits them and other people around them. So then I work backwards of saying, well, how do you put yourself, Lewis, in the best situation that you can to make the highest quality decision so that your organization constantly improves by 1% or 2% more than your competitors? And that's really, by the way, the difference between businesses that are wildly successful and businesses that are not. It's not usually one moment that happened. It may seem like that from a press release, but the reality is it's a series of an individual or leaders making collectively better decisions, 1%, 2%, or 3% more every single day that ultimately puts a completely different trajectory of the organization in itself. So then from there, if you say, well, then if I want to put myself in the best situation that I can to make the highest quality decisions, then I think we'd all agree on this call, right? That is the best thing that we can do is to be clear, centered, not emotionally attached to anything, willing to let go and show up that way. Then you can make the clearest distinction from what it is. And so for me, that's kind of how I approach business and life. I mean, remember, the only present moment, the only moment that actually exists is the present moment. It's the now, right? Outside of that, what you're doing is you're escaping to the mind to kind of distract yourself from the present moment. That's what people do. That's why people go on vacations. The people go on vacations to distract themselves from themselves. People also go in the work to distract themselves from themselves. Whereas to me, and what I've learned, and I think Lewis or Kyle, you asked that question earlier in my life, was I don't want to play that game anymore. And so therefore I'm willing to look at who I am and then show up and bring that into whatever I do. And so therefore you don't need anything from the world anymore. There's a big sign that I have I've been used for a while. It says need nothing, everything. And boy, does that really get people right away. Like, how can you need nothing and enjoy everything, Adam? Like, your mind will go ballistic just saying that. Like, it's like, you can even hear it now going like, how can that even be? Of course, you're going to have preferences and likes and there's things that I need, right? Outside of the physical needs of shelter, food, water, and stuff like that, really isn't things that you actually need. Those are psychological needs that you've created. And that's why when the Buddha went away for a while, he said all life is suffering and the cause of all suffering is likes and dislikes or preferences. Because when you don't really need anything, you get to enjoy all of life. I mean, you literally dropped down here and it's basically every day is Disneyland. There's different people, there's different colors, there's animals that sing to you, there's different flowers, all of this stuff. Again, the point of all of this is like, I still think, there's still this external world that you can play in, but it just makes you a fierce business competitor. It makes you a fierce artist. It makes you a better husband, a better father, a better leader, all of these things when you're not attached to any of this stuff. It's you're untethering yourself from what you think you need so that you can go out there and contribute and just enjoy it. Wouldn't it be better to just be able to go out there and enjoy the moments that are unfolding versus get riled up from them? Then you can go out there and build a business. You can succeed. You can make lots of money. By the way, money is wonderful, but at the same time, it's so overrated. I mean, I don't mean overrated in a way of like saying that. I mean, I've made millions and millions of dollars in my life. So some people say, well, it's easy for you to say, Adam. Maybe it is easy for me to say because I've done it, but take some wisdom from that. Take the wisdom from the billionaires that are out there that are also miserable. I was having lunch the other day, and I'll pause, but I was having lunch the other day with one of the wealthiest people in the state of Vermont. And he was at a Warren Buffett's kind of had the giving pledge. He had like 100 billionaires that were there. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, Adam, he's like, 97 of these people are miserable. These people have their names on 7 hospitals. They created wonderful technology. They've created crazy drugs that have changed the world. I mean, they've done amazing things, but they're still caught in this trap of needing more. They need more money or need more service in order to maintain what they're doing. And they've forgotten the entire point just to enjoy the experience that's unfolding in front of you. What's wrong with that?
I think there's a ton of wisdom. I mean, obviously, in everything that you're saying. I think that one question I have for you, one of the mottos in the book, is to kind of learn, work, and play every day. Yeah. You come across, at least in this first, and I think it's also showing up to the moment, right? We've asked you very serious, deep questions and kind of guided that type of conversation. So you've come to those moments with very deep and intense thoughts. So I'm curious to hear a little bit on the flip side, kind of what the, like, so the working side is also very clear to me, but what do learning and playing, how does that manifest for you on a daily basis? Kind of these other sides to yourself.
Yeah, you know, that was a very linear conversation early in my life where I realized that most people spend first 18, 20 years of their life in a box. And that box is called learning. And then once you get to the learning box, you then go to this next box called working. And people spend 30, 40, 50 years working in a box that they don't even like. I'm just paraphrasing now. Some people do, but most people don't like, and they're waiting for some magic moment to enter that third box when they can go and play. That's really what they are. So it's like they literally live this linear entire life of trying to get to the next box. And I just saw it one day and I was like, you know, I'm not going to do this. And I've already doing it. So I just put it in the words that way, which is instead of learning, working, then playing in these big decades of my life, I'm going to go out there and learn, work, and play every single day. Now, let's also define what that means, because working can also be play, but as we all know, it can also be work, right? Playing with my kids can be play, but it can also be work, right? Learning can be done through experience, and it can also be done through listening to a podcast or reading a book or an article or at a conference. And so for me, it's not even the hourly amount that I'm putting on each one. I just wake up and say, I'm going to learn, work, and play every single day. And so it's just a frame of reference of how I come into life so that learning doesn't get left behind, so that playing doesn't get left behind. And playing for me also, I'm a big endurance athlete. I've done 21 Ironmans and I skin up mountains or all over different places. So I love the physical feats that my body can do. And so I also, that is when I'm 42, playing at 42 is different than playing at 62. And so I'm also going to play. And so I think if people can look at that and go, how do I learn, work, and play every single day? They just have more work-life presence in their life, which the work-life presence is not about work-life balance. It's no matter what I'm doing, I'm present in that moment. I think one of the biggest mistakes people are making from a time management perspective now is they're half in, half out, no matter what they're doing. I'm working, but I'm also checking Instagram. I'm with my family, but I'm also working, right? I'm trying to ride my bike, but I'm also taking a phone call on business. It's like they're literally, people are in and out. And so they're not really present for anything. And then they wake up and go to the end of the day and they go, what do I even do? Like I'm feeling so hurried and rushed and all these different things that are happening. And so for me, it's like whatever I'm doing, I'm putting my, you know, you could say your whole self. It sounds kind of cheesy, but the reality is that you're taking your entire presence, your energy, and you're putting it at work and you're focused. And then when you go over and you're with your family or with your friends or by yourself, you're fully engaged in that. I used to call it fully engaged and strategically disengaged from work anyways. That was because how I used to teach people a lot in my business that, like, look, I want you fully engaged at work. But the minute you're off work, I want you strategically disengaged so you're actually able to reload yourself and show up better the next day.
So that's something that I struggle with, is like, I dream about, like, work right now, I feel like, is the thing that I'm really focused on. It's like, I dream about it. I can't turn it off. I'm thinking about it all the time. And it makes me kind of hate it. Like, frankly, it's just like, I cannot stop thinking about it when I wake up in the morning, when I go to sleep. And I have this like obsessive compulsive kind of thing. And it's served me throughout my life in school and in all these different, maybe obsessive obsessive second word isn't correct. But like, because I don't have OCD, but like, how do I stop this from running in my mind 100 hours of the day? And then also, another part of this is like, at the same time, I'm thinking about why I don't have 10 investment properties, and like, why I'm not Adam H, and why I'm not, you know, like,
yeah.
And so that's what I need help with.
Yeah. Yeah. You, and I mean, again, 99% of other people in the world. That's why I literally wrote the book that life. But you guys are in a different phase. I was in your same phase, by the way. When I first got into work, I worked 12-hour days, 7 days a week. I wanted power, money, fame. I wanted people to bow down to me, tell me how amazing I was, right? I wanted people to kiss the ring. And seriously, I mean, like, if you had asked me then, that's what, I wouldn't have told you that, but that's how I acted, right? That's not, I mean, I'm kind of being a little facetious, but I'm not, right? Like, that's, it was arrogance. It was ego. It was like, look at me. Look, I'm amazing. I started in Vermont, and this, I borrowed $8,000 to start my first business, and I built a $1 billion company. Everyone should, kidding me? Like, you guys should, where's the note cards every day coming in and tell me how great I am, right? And then what you realize is like, when I started down this path, and I had set, by the way, myself up with this financial goal of, once I made $500,000 in net income, that, whoa, I had hit the level. And remember, this is 15, 16 years ago. So whatever that is, inflation is probably 17 million now. But like, I had this goal of $500,000 in income. And I remember hitting it. I was like 26, and I was at a holiday party, and I went to my mom, who's the most unassuming person. I was like, yeah, I made $500,000 a year this year. And she's like, great, pass the ketchup. And in that moment, I realized people don't give a shit. Mm. And then I asked myself a question. I said, well, do I even give a shit? And the answer was, I didn't. And so then I started asking a deeper question, which is, what is my intent for all of this? And Kyle, this is the way out for you, which is asking the starting phase of this is, why am I doing all of this? I don't mean, why am I doing, like, so I need to build a legacy, which we can talk about. I think building a legacy is a ridiculous thing to do. Anyways, we can put a pin in that and go on later. It's an unconventional answer, but it's really about, what is my intent? Why do I feel I need to go bury myself in work right now? And what you'll realize is, it'll trace it back to, I want to feel some sort of power or fame or some sort of emotion that's trying to drive you. And just by doing that awareness will start separating yourself from your ego or from your self-concept that you've created. And by the way, that we're all, particularly people in business that are younger, you're taught that. And really, by the way, and maybe you get this now, maybe you get it later on. It took me a little while to get it, so maybe you guys are smarter than I am. But the reality is, when people say, go be successful, instantly, like, the three of us, Winston, would go, like, that's money. For the most part. Now, you may say something else, but most people, for like a political answer, but most people say successful is about being money. And really what you're saying is, I want to get enough money and power and fame so that I can control the situations around me so they don't affect my inner life. And that's what success really means to people. It's so silly. And so my whole point is, well, why don't you just go get your inner world okay, and then you can handle anything that comes your way. And that's what the 200% Life book is all about. It's a model, it's a roadmap for how to be able to do that. But that's really, to answer your question, that's where you need to start, which is just keep asking the intent, like, why do I feel I need to go do this? Why do I need 10 investment properties? And then your mind will say, well, so you can have power and fame and get the situation the way you want it and get whatever you want. Or a person that's on a deep inward path never goes, they don't really ever wake up and go, I want to get everything I want to get. Because many, many, many people have come before us, guys, and said and gotten everything they ever wanted and then killed themselves.
Mm. Yep. Kyle likes to talk about Ecclesiastes all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the same story.
I quote him in the book. Yeah, that's exactly right.
King Solomon.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I have, you know, tons of questions, kind of just thinking of which one, you know, in the moment makes the most sense to ask here, and lots to think about. In terms of what does actually doing the inner work look like in a structured way? So that's kind of something I was hinting at before we had started talking was, you know, we've had a lot of people come on the podcast and talk about kind of the idea of be, then do, then have, right? That's kind of a similar framework of the world. You have to be a certain way to show up a certain way to have certain things happen. We did, I think, a very similar guest with a similar worldview. His name is Vash, and he does a lot of coaching where he talks a lot about, you know, coming from operating from that, I don't want to say ideal state because maybe ideal is not a good word, but operating from a positive, happy, present state, being in the moment, all these things, then kind of you have better outcomes when you show up happy and have your needs met and kind of address the inner work. So what has your path looked like in terms of consistently doing the inner work? Has that kind of been a solo journey where you just sit down and journal every day and that's what keeps you accountable and you've managed to stick to that? Have you really invested heavily in having someone guide you through these learnings?
Yeah.
Kind of what's your path to people? Because a lot of people listen to this podcast, maybe they're on a bicycle, right? When I was doing research for you, most of that was done on my bike.
Yeah.
I was researching you and commuting to and from work or doing something. And so you say all these things, you say, ask yourself, why? And then, you know, you have to slam on the brakes and you forget the question, then you move on and then you never ask that question again. So what is like your prescription for integration?
You know, I think that's a wonderful question. Thank you for that. I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of techniques we can put in our lives, and I'll give you the ultimate how I think is the best one to handle. But for me, I think I always start out every morning. So I get up around 4:30 every morning. The first thing I do is I meditate for 20 minutes. I do what's called transcendental meditation. A lot of people use transcendental meditation, but really, whatever meditation works for you, do it. Unlike whatever type of thing works for you, you should use. It's a model for me. It happens to work well. Then I get into a series of journaling. I journal about each of my kids. I journal about my wife. I journal about my life, good, bad, and ugly. It kind of helps clear things out for me to be centered. And exercise is a big one for me as well, too. I exercise 1 to 2 hours on a normal day. And then my longer days are 4 to 5 hours. And so for me, it's a big way of doing it. While I'm doing that, like you, Lewis, I'm listening to podcasts or books, or sometimes just having, you know, a peaceful ride in the mountains. And then I meditate again. Around midday to kind of help recenter myself and gain a little bit more clarity. But for me, the real work is done in the moment. Those are, to me, are just all giving me the ability to handle life. And to me, what spirituality or personal growth is to actually be able to handle what's happening. Look, if you're a doctor and you can't handle blood, you're no good. If you're a leader and you can't handle people quitting or filing lawsuits against you or yelling at you or giving you criticism, you're no good. If you're a parent and you can't handle your kid acting up or doing something different or not being the way you want them to, you're no good to be a parent. So it's in each of the moments that are happening. Look, there's only two things you can be doing when a moment happens. One is enjoying the experience that is unfolding. Number two is letting go of that part of you that is preventing you from enjoying the experience that's unfolding. Or at minimum, accepting the experience that's unfolding. If you're on your deathbed, you're probably not enjoying the experience, though there's plenty of people that have been there and saying they're enjoying their experience. But if somebody else is dying around you, or you're losing your company, or you're going bankrupt, you may not be enjoying the experience, but you can always accept reality. You can always accept the experience. Let me give you this example. Over the weekend, we were at a friend's house, and we were having dinner. My daughter, who's 11, went to go jump on a box jump, and she went, it's like 30-inch box jump, and she fell forward, hurt her wrist, instantly crying. It's like 7:30 at night. She was in a, you know, she starts the whole night. She's like, I can't play in my lacrosse tournament. I can't play soccer. Like, my wrist is broken, just suffering. And the next morning she wakes up and she's like, my wrist really hurts. Like, I wish this never happened. I wish I could take back time. And I go, look, the reality of the situation is your wrist is broken or it's not broken. And the situation has already happened. You have to accept that. Right now, what you're doing is you're creating a tremendous amount of suffering in your own mind because you keep thinking about all the things that it's going to prevent you from not doing, and you don't even know if it's broken. This isn't the way going into the emergency room. We get to the emergency room. She's still doing the same thing. We go in there, get x-rays, and they're like, your arm is not broken. Instantaneously, somehow, she's no longer suffering anymore. And it was because the doctor then said, then she didn't have the mind chatter going on of telling her all the things that are going to go wrong with a broken arm. And it's severely sprained and it's only going to be a couple of days. And if we get out of that, she's like, I can handle that. Now, all of a sudden, she's no longer suffering and she's back to handling reality of life. And that's part of, in each moment, can you handle what's happening? So it's, we've all been there. An email comes in and somebody writes something to you and you get instantly taken away. And everyone knows what I mean by that. Like you get, become unconscious, you get irritated, frustrated, you're angry. No matter what it is, you couldn't handle it. So now you've become the emotion. Now you're responding on behalf of the emotion itself. Just like somebody's calling you and you see the name, and before you even answer the phone, all of your energy goes away and you go, right? Like this is now all of a sudden you in a situation where you can't handle it. So for me, it's in all of those moments, that moment the driver cuts you off in front of you and you start getting angry. And we're all in business. It's a zero cost, zero benefit, 100% cost in getting angry at that person. Seriously. So in that moment, you let go of the part of you. You surrender to the part of you. You relax the part of you that is preventing you from actually enjoying the experience or handling the experience itself. That to me is the real personal growth. Whereas when something used to bother you, after you've done the work by letting it experience itself through you, allowing you, you do that inner work, it no longer bothers you. And as it no longer bothers you, it ceases to offend you. And so therefore it doesn't disturb you anymore. Therefore you can handle the situation.
Yeah. I was just telling Kyle the other day, it's, you know, I do a good amount of inner work and meditation things. And it's always interesting when something like that happens and you actually have an example of like some evidence.
Yes.
So I just got like a brand new pair of white shoes and I was bringing in groceries and like the handle on the bag slipped, this like glass of purple juice, which is basically just dye at the end of the day, just like falls and shatters everywhere and gets all my shoes. And I just like have no reaction besides like, I guess I got to clean this up.
But yes.
Like, not like, and then the other day, like the next day I was leaving work and I had social plans to meet a friend for yoga. I go outside and my bike tire is completely flat and I like did not budget the extra time for that. It's like, all right, guess I'm finding a scooter. And it's just like this very muted reaction to like, this moment. I'm like, okay, I guess this has a payoff.
Personal growth.
Lewis has a way of accepting things like that. It's harder for me. I have a story too. On my drive to work, there's this house. And
they're already getting heated. I can feel the energy increasing.
It's in this spot in Birmingham that overlooks, it's on Shades Crest Road, if anybody's from Birmingham listening. And there's this house that emanates ugliness. It's like you can tell the spirit of the person that lives there is like dirty. They have like signs up that say no parking everywhere. It's like a chain link fence. The siding is ruined. You can just tell that they're a negative person. And every time I drive past it, I get this like heat in me. And I was driving past the other day and I just prayed that that would be no longer, I would no longer get so angry when I see this random third party person's house. And since then it's really worked. So I recommend that.
Yeah.
I don't feel the anger and ire.
Well, the technique, so that's the highest technique that you can use. So what you do is you relax, you allow the event to actually make its way through you, and then you're there to be able to handle reality, or you'll be able to deal with reality, or just do nothing. Because you know what the funny thing is? The more you apply this in your life, you realize 90% of what you were doing was reaction from that ego or self's concept. It's not actually being necessary. Then you're now free to put your energy on things that are actually wonderful and producing something of a higher quality in life. So that is the real growth that people are after. That's the real work. When the rubber hits the road, people always want to know, what is spirituality? And what do I really do for personal growth? What's that? When you're bothered, and everyone knows what that means, you're fine. The next thing you know, you're not fine, right? You're angry or irritated or jealous or frustrated, whatever that is. And by the way, I would even argue like, you know, what the funny thing is about this is you're already so much more in psychology than everyone ever thinks it is. Like you're in there. And you know the difference between the subtle vibrations of energy between anger and jealousy or irritation and frustration. And you can say, I'm not irritated, I'm frustrated. How do you know? You always go back to that because you're going to be pissed off at me and say, well, because I'm in here and I'm experiencing and I understand what irritation is, but it's a subtle difference of energy. Energy doesn't know that it's anger. It doesn't know that it's irritation. This is one of the things on people's spiritual path, one of the first things they do is the mistakes they make is you try to actually go and smooth out or calm down the anger, which by the way, anger's nature is to be angry. You can never go in there and try to calm anger down. it would be literally like taking a very clear pond, throwing a rock in there and going, you know what, Lewis, I don't like these ripples. Jump in there and try to smooth the ripples out by jumping in there. That's what people do with emotions. They don't like the emotion. They don't like the feeling of it. So then they jump in there with their mind, voice, all that stuff, and they try to rearrange it. All it does is make it twice as bad, three times bad. And then that's when you go down a rabbit hole about how I'm going to get after this person, why they're terrible and why they should die and never be around here. I mean, the mind just goes ballistic on that whole thing. It erupts. So that's why the best thing that you can do in that technique is to relax around it. Give it its space. Allow that house, Kyle, to work its way through you. Prayer is a wonderful thing. Whatever works, works. Whatever you can do to allow the experience to make its way through you no longer leaves an impression. Those impressions, by the way, are called samskaras, if you ever heard of that. It's an ancient Sanskrit term. A samskara, by the way, is because we all know that everything's energy. Psychologists will tell you that. Scientists will tell you that. Everything is energy, right? Atoms, molecules, right? Hydrogen, it's all energy. And what a samskara is, and again, this was 2,500 years ago, they talk about these things, which is that, so every event has energy to it, right? So losing money feels different than making money because it's got its own energy pattern. The ones that you don't like, you try to push away. And when you push away, what you're actually doing is preventing that experience from making its way through you. So then this is why the circle is the most powerful form in the universe. Because energy can stay still and move in a circle. So then you form a samskara, which is a stored energy pattern. You could also think of it as like a stored stress event. And it's staying in you and it's just moving in a circle. Mm. So now then anything, then fast forward, then the moment outside happens. And the moment happens, and guess what? It hits. Hits all of your stored samskaras, which is why people are not okay, because the samskaras are the ones causing all of this emotion to come up in the first place. And so the event happens. That's why the event can unfold and it cannot bother me, cannot bother Kyle, but it really bothers Lewis. Then the next moment doesn't bother Lewis or Kyle, but it really bothers me. Remember, the moment in front of you is never the problem. You are always bothering yourself about the moment. And it's because of your stored samskaras or your stored energy patterns that you didn't allow them to work their way through you. Therefore, they are stuck within you. So now anything that happens outside that resembles that moment is going to literally light up all of the energy that's in there. And when you stored it because it was painful, it's going to come up as painful as well too.
We have time for a few rapid fire questions before we sign off here. On a relevant note, so I'm going to ask two and then you can kind of just go through them in rapid succession. First, what are your recommendations for kind of releasing old energy stores, right? So I think a lot of the dealing with the present stuff, right, is you just experience it and then you don't store it and then you don't have that problem. But in terms of releasing old ones from before, let's say like a post-enlightenment, so some pre-enlightenment ones. And then also I'm curious about your personal relationship with Michael Singer. You've kind of used a lot of his lingo here, kind of you've used the word untethered, you use the word surrender a lot. Those are kind of words from his ecosystem. And I'm curious what you've learned from knowing him personally that goes beyond just what someone might learn from reading his books.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one is you don't have to worry about releasing the old because the moment life itself will show you what's time to release. Life is your guru that way. So in any moment, there's going to be something that either, again, that you're experiencing or something that's bothering you. So if something is bothering you, release it. That means in that moment, you're able to release it and you're releasing old energy. Like people go to the Himalayas to try to get people to unlock something they can do when all they have to do is go out, lean into life. This is why I'm a big fan of business is nothing but a conduit of your personal growth. Because in business, a lot of shit's going to hit your way that you don't want to happen. And guess what? You have a lot of opportunity to let go. Being fired, firing people, trying to manage money, trying to lose money, make money, right? All of these things happen. So you have to do that. Michael is a personal friend of mine. I spent a lot of time with Michael. What I've learned from him is it's interesting. He's got a very interesting nature, like, you know, things that people might, well, but he still lives in the same house that he built. The guy's, he's got tremendous amount of capital that he can do anything he ever wanted with, and he doesn't. He's married, but they live in separate houses. His nature is very much introverted and exclusive. He's also like, and I think you guys will get this, he's also like the best dog you've ever had. And what I mean by that is you can walk up to him and tell him anything, and his look and love that he'll give to you is unconditional no matter what. You know what I mean by that? Like, you, that's the best way, because he's so close to consciousness that and letting his ego go all the way through that doesn't bother him anymore. That when you look into him, you look into his eyes, there is nothing but pure love for you, just like your dog, right? That's the only, I say that as an example, because people get that. They go, you can yell at your dog, you can hit your dog, you can abuse your dog, the dog still comes back wagging its tail, unconditional love for you. And I feel, obviously, you're not going to physically hurt anybody, you get that, but you can look into him and you can be with him, and that's all you feel. You could tell him anything that you ever did, from the worst crime to whatever direction you want to take your life, and he would not care one iota. And that's not a say, like, you can just feel that. He doesn't have to say it, you just know it. It's one of the best gifts I think you can give to anybody. That's why the more clear you can be, if you're a pure spiritual seeker, you know, you wake up every day with the intent to remove all of this garbage that's inside of me so that I can continue to raise up everybody else around me.
I have two questions as well. Number one is, how do we love more, and how do we accept love more? And then the second one, completely unrelated, why real estate?
Yeah, it's a good question. For the love question, it's hard to go tell somebody how to go love more, because I don't know if they can do that. But what I can tell you is, just if you choose not to close your heart, you will love more. So it's almost about working backwards. The reason why you don't love more is because you close your heart off. So in each moment, you can ask yourself, is it worth closing my heart over? And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. You're in, like, yesterday, a couple of days ago, my wife and I started arguing about something. It wasn't even an argument. We don't really fight. But my daughter, my youngest daughter, goes, oh, mom, dad, you guys need a hug. And every part of my ego wanted to be like, fuck you. I don't want to hug this person right now, right? Like, and it wanted to close my heart down so much. And that in that moment, you have that choice. Am I going to allow myself to close my heart over this? Or can I keep my heart open and experience more love? That's going to be your path. For me, real estate was, I think I would have been successful at pretty much anything that I went into, especially at that stage in my life. And it happened to be in real estate. I bought my first piece of real estate as a sophomore in college. And then I started building personal houses and selling them, which, you know, I was making 100, 200 grand initially to making millions of dollars flipping personal houses. And really the reality is that money actually gave me the ability to invest and take all of the money from my business profits and invest it back into my businesses, which then allowed me to scale my businesses faster. I always love real estate. I think it's a great industry. I was also really good in sales. So it was a high paying sales job that I could enter in with borrowing. I had no money. So I borrowed 8 grand, and that was an easy industry for me to be able to enter into with high probability of a high earning potential if you apply yourself. And my dad was also a sole proprietor, so he was a builder. And so he would, you know, and I was kind of grew up around real estate and him moving in houses. And so I fell into that. I still love real. And it's also for me, I love creating things. I'm actually not really good at operating businesses at all. In fact, I've fired myself from every job that I've ever had after I started a business, because I'm not really good at operating. And once the hard work is kind of done, I don't really get much satisfaction from it. And so for me, real estate's a way of physically bringing a vision to life, which I do the same thing in business.
We're coming up on time here. We've covered a lot. People think we've maybe, you know, discussed the book, a lot of topics that are similar in the book. What is in the book we haven't covered, so that, you know, you've got a lot in this conversation, tons of value. I bet we've discussed maybe like 10, 20%. Maybe that's even high in terms of topics in the book. What else do you cover? Who's this book for? Where can people find it?
Yeah, you know, it's a form of leadership. And it's a form of living your life that allows you, to me, it was a self-therapy, because when I realized that going and getting what I wanted outside wasn't going to work, I didn't want to go live in a cave somewhere reciting haikus next to a fire, sitting Indian style, which isn't even comfortable to sit that way anyway. So like, I don't know why people do. So like, I wanted to go out and play with the world, but at the same time, I knew it wasn't going to work for me. And so I think a lot of people are in that same boat, which is they wake up and they go, man, I really want to engage in the world, and I want to go have, you know, I want to go have these experiences and make money and do different things. But at the same time, I also don't want it to be about it, right? I don't want it to, my life to be about that. I want it to be about other things. So the book is written in a way that it becomes a model and a roadmap for how you can live your life chronologically, so that you can go out there and play in the business world or whatever it is that you do, artist, teacher, right? Any of that. I just happen to be having a lot more followers in business and entrepreneurship. And that's where my expertise kind of came in for building businesses. So it catered a little bit more to the entrepreneur or the leader or the employee who's leading other people. But, you know, I just got, you know, I just got feedback because it just launched a couple of weeks ago or last week. And it's people that are reading it that are, you know, that are not in business and they're getting things out of it. In fact, I was doing the Audible today and this lady was like, I want to buy this book for my 30-year-old son and be able to give it to him because I want him to be able to mirror the do in the being of life. And I think that's really what it tries to do in that way. So it's a form of leadership. It also makes you a fierce business competitor. So if you want to go out there and build a big business, I think that's a, it's a great way of being able to do that and be an effective leader.
Amazing. And it's on Amazon. It's on your website.
Yep. Amazon, adamhergenauthor.com. You can go there. We have a bunch of free stuff there as well too. The Audible will be out likely in a week or so by the time this recording hits. So it'll be there.
Awesome. And you can also get a free, I got to have this written down here. The Future Self Daily Email. That's something I want to do. I think that seems really, really rad. So Adam, thank you so much. I think you're sharing a lot of light and a lot of wisdom and a lot of just fundamental truths that people's lives are better for coming to terms with. So appreciate you coming on the show and wishing you all the best with the book launch.
Lewis, Kyle, thank you so much for what you guys do. You bring a lot of value to your people.